listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
There you are. You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Oh, my goodness. We've got Steve Hart and his partner, Martina Petru, who won't be joining us. But this has been a guest that's been promoted to us by our listeners. Imagine that. Steve Hart and his partner, Martina Petru. Have I got those names correct, Steve?
Yes, that's correct.
You're clearly very well thought of in your local community. And Martina, get this, has a PhD in forest ecology, credited in Maori medicinals, and is a Stein accredited school teacher. And Steve is an eco-architect with 7 diplomas in permaculture. Steve's company description: the fusion of architecture, landscape architecture, and urban design through systems ecology overlaid with permaculture. Steve, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Rodney. Great to be on with your company.
Well, it's lovely to have you. How did you get into all of this?
Oh, I was born that way. Born bent. You know. As a kid growing up on the farm, I spent a lot of time in the neighbouring bush, and I just was engrossed in that whole ecology. And it was just a gradual progression from there. You know, when I was a kid at secondary school, the careers advisor came along and said, "Okay, what are we going to make you into?" And I said, "I want to be an ecology architect." And so the careers advisor said, "What's that?"
So wow. And I mean, I don't mean to be rude, but that was a while ago.
Yeah, it was. Well, I'm 70 now, so that's, a good 55 years ago.
So you had this, not only this idea that you wanted to get into ecology and the environment, which in of itself was a big, you know, a new thing 50 years ago.
Absolutely.
But you wanted to fuse that with architecture, which would have been unheard of.
Totally unheard of, and it probably still is today in reality. The academic pathway and career pathway was I had to combine all of those disciplines together. So that's what I've done. I've gone right through architecture, doing my bachelor's degree at Auckland and my postgrad at Auckland and master's in Wellington, and then environmental design in Tasmania University, and moulded all that through permaculture as well, but also very heavily involved in planning, urban design. And I've worked for several different councils in Australia and New Zealand, so, and major corporates around the world. So it's been an exciting journey and learning all the way.
How amazing. And tell me what permaculture is.
Permaculture is a word coined from two words: permanent agriculture. One of the founders, David Holmgren, was doing his thesis at the same college I went to in Tasmania, and he was concerned at the traditional chemical mechanized forms of agriculture that we see all around the world, and he explored what alternatives exist from traditional patterns of agriculture and indigenous patterns of agriculture, and quickly realised that there is a new way of looking at agriculture, bringing on organics and ecological principles, and basically coined that word, permanent agriculture, permaculture. And his lecturer, mentor, Bill Mollison, very much an extrovert, an extremely intelligent person who was involved in field ecology in Tasmania, they got together. They actually shared a house together with several other people as well. So it was an exciting journey those first few years. And that was in the late 1970s, and I joined up with them in 1981 in Tasmania, and the journey began there.
Wow. So, we had the dirt doctor on yesterday, you'll be pleased to know. You'd know he had a shocking Jim O'Gorman. Do you know Jim?
Yeah. He's been around a while too.
He had a shocking line, so possibly listeners only got every second word, but it was a gem. And what he is talking about would be on point with permaculture.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's lots of, associate linkages, one might say. And it's great, it's growing. You know, Joel Salatin, one of the notaries in US farming of similar fields, has just been appointed to the new Trump administration to design a whole new pathway for US agriculture.
Don't you find, just wandering a bit here, don't you find that the most extraordinary thing that we have nominally a right-wing conservative president, and you would normally expect them to be right up there with all the corporates, and here he is with RFK Jr. and Joel Salatin. It's inconceivable for most people's politics, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, politics, we've been conditioned to hate politics, abhor it. And consequently, every 3 years, we're all political experts for one day.
Yeah.
Every 3 years. So.
But Joel Salatin, I mean, that guy in agriculture, he is he's a hero, right, what he's done with his farm.
He absolutely is, and he's a great marketeer as well.
Yes.
So that's a bonus. Yeah.
And there he is in a position of power with the ability to make a difference.
Oh, it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. You know, the whole network, the organic ecological farming network in USA is very, very healthy. There's fingers everywhere.
Yes.
And there's great examples right across the whole country.
Well, I just pinched myself. I just, like RFK and Joel Salatin, I mean, I remember watching his stories about him, documentaries about him. And it's like he would be permaculture and regenerative agriculture. That would be how you describe him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. With organics in there as well.
Yes,
and in the Great Britain, the organic movement is moving quite rapidly into ecological agriculture. So they're understanding more of the ecological realm, which is where my argument comes from. And what I often say is that we haven't begun to understand the dynamics of ecology yet.
No. And everything that we find out makes a bigger mystery.
Huge, huge. And that's the exciting part about it.
But also, everything we find out teaches us, like the human body, the intricacy.
Oh yeah, with finding out new stuff daily, you know.
And you don't run off having a sense of that intricacy and interaction and complexity, and then start spraying Roundup everywhere.
Well, that's for the lazy farmer.
Or taking a jab. And you have now, I never know how to word this. You have a partner, Martina. Is it partner, wife?
Yep.
Okay.
We got married twice this year.
Oh, perfect. And she has a PhD in forest ecology.
Yeah, forest ecology communities. Looking at all the communities, which is another ecological realm of forests. And forests have many, many, many forms all around the world. So she did her field work in Madagascar. From the university she was with was the zoology department of Hamburg University in Germany.
You're an amazing couple. Now, I'm very excited to be talking to you, Steve, because what your background in is right on point to all our interests. But we're getting to this point where you and Martina built a beautiful house.
Well, yeah, it's a work in progress.
Tell me about the house.
We moved on to this block south of Thames, between Thames and Pyra, 8 years ago. It's a stunning AR13-acre block. It's river frontage, so majority of the soils are river alluvials, alluvial silts. So it grows good trees. And it had a little old shearing shed on it. Now, the shearing shed was built 120 years ago as a cow shed originally. And in 1960, they converted it to a shearing shed. When we arrived here, the shearing piece was still on the wall. So we could have switched the power on and started shearing. The wool press was here, the spread table, everything, just like the sheep had just walked out the door. So we stripped it, cleaned it, and restructured it to above the code, to our temporary dwelling, because we were parked in the garden in the caravan.
Yep.
And the long-term intention is for the shearing shed to revert to our garden shed.
Yep.
And then, because we've got quite an extensive garden, I call it our 13-acre garden, and it's all edibles, spices, herbs, and medicinals. So, we restructured it, and I also built a little two-story cabin on wheels, two axles, and I towed that out into the paddock and popped it up. That's about 90% complete. And then also our second oldest daughter was demanding that I build her a treehouse. So, yeah, I found an old, big old privet tree in the hedge line and I built her a treehouse. But the problem is it was a 5-star treehouse. And, the kids, you know, it's only 10 square metres, 3 metres by 3 metres. And the kids spend their time in there. And it's great. And underneath it, it's got rabbit hutches. So, you know, the big fat white rabbits that we eat. And, it's an exciting place for the kids.
I bet. And it's beautiful, safe, and a family live there.
Yeah, Martina and I and four daughters, 12, 10, 8 and 6.
And it's your land?
Yep, freehold.
And the neighbours are happy?
As far as I know. they haven't complained. They still wave out when they drive by.
But the council was upset.
Well, I'm a bit of a renegade or a radical in that arena of I enjoy politics, a bit like you, Rodney.
Yes. I don't enjoy it, funnily enough.
Yeah, well, you did momentarily.
I did momentarily. I put on a good show.
You did. Very good. But I've been intrigued by politics ever since I was at school.
Yes.
And I've followed it all the way through. I was one of the founding members of the Green Party.
Yes.
And, it was a very different Green Party in those days, as you know.
Yes.
And I've enjoyed politics. I've stood for mayor 4 times and stood for a couple of other parties. Jumped on board with Sue Gray and the Outdoors Party.
Oh, good on you.
And just to promote that world of ecological agriculture predominantly as my absolute passion.
Sounds like you got a phone ringing.
Oh, it's been ringing flat out for the last week.
It's probably because you're online talking to us.
Maybe. Maybe.
So you've got a political profile that is seen as, I imagine you're all the things that I am. You're a anti-vaxxer, conspiracy theorist, nut job.
Well, probably. I wouldn't say nut job. I haven't been locked up yet.
Give them time, Steve. Give them time.
true. But I just enjoy the intellectual debate. I enjoy the stimulation. So yes. I was one of those kids that grew up and always asking the question why, which got me into trouble all the time, and just wanting to find the truth and the answers. And of course, we've been lied to for a long, long time.
Indeed.
And we've deceived and tricked and conned and conditioned heavily, and now the world's fighting back. Yeah. And, I've been out there on that bandwagon myself. And, in the last mayoral campaign here for Thames Coromandel District Council, the media got hold of it and, they put me on the front page of the Waikato Times, I think 3 times. One of them was conspiracy theorist stands as mayor.
Yes.
You know, I'm a conspiracy researcher.
Yes.
And I admit I am a conspiracy theorist because I conspire with myself every morning to get out of bed. Yeah.
So you got that profile. By the way, again, you'd be positive for the Trump administration.
Well, when you dig, and there's a great website called realnewsandhistory.com.
Oh, someone was telling me about this, yeah?
Yeah, it's probably the best linkage to what's going on underneath the blankets.
Yeah.
It's very American.
Yeah.
But the guy who created it, Michael S. King, not to be confused with our Michael King.
Yeah.
But he's a research journalist, and he just loves that digging deep and putting the stories out there. He tells a great story, and he's written about 38 books. I've bought about 7 or 8 of them myself. And great reading. His number one book is The Bad War. If you read that, it'll be like, now the truth unfolds.
Ah.
So you'd love it. I think you'd love it. You can get it PDF. I've got it PDF. And I've got several of other his PDFs, but also got the hard copies.
And so what do you make of Trump after following this guy, Michael S. King?
Well, there's a lot of unknowns out there. And, of course, there's a lot of deceit, a lot of propaganda, a lot of misguided stories, intentionally. But if you dig and join the dots, my view is probably very similar to Michael King's, in that he is leading a group, a bigger, larger group, unknown to the general populace, to actually tidy the world up. Now, you just look at his record, his political record when he was president in the last term, and how many wars that he pulled or stopped or didn't get involved with, and how much stuff did he actually clean up. So, but then you look at the other side of the argument, the propaganda, the bashing machine against him is amazing. So how much money is going into that and by who? So if you ask the questions and dig and join the dots, it becomes very obvious. You know, I loved his show that was on TV about 20-odd years ago.
The Apprentice,
and he's a strong character. There's no doubt about it. And crikey, the world, the way the world's in at the moment, we need a person like him to be steering the boat.
Isn't it strange that you and I, because I originally started out as an ecologist, that you and I were on different sides of the so-called New Zealand political spectrum, ACT and Green. And here we are on the same page, and here we are supporting Donald Trump, who on paper you'd say should be as far away from us as you could imagine, being a New York property developer billionaire, and yet here he is promoting the likes of RFK Jr. and Joel Salatin, and you're thinking we could be standing on the cusp of a whole new world where what we've been banging on about is mainstreamed in America.
Yes, and growing rapidly. You know, what Joel Salatin is talking about is actually really exciting, and he's joined up with whatever they call him, one of the governors who has got some strong, similar views as well, and I think it'll go a long way. And all the homework's already done. There's lots of models out there. There's lots of science out there. There's lots and lots of templates out there. Things could change within a week. It's as simple as that. And yes. I find it extremely exciting.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
You know, I've
been heavily involved in the organic network as well. You know, one of the very early members. When the BioGrow first launched.
Yeah.
And I've kept a close eye on it and close contact And I've just been talking with the last remaining executives of the Soil and Health Association to try and assist them in reincarnating, because it's nearly dead, so we've got to bring it back to life.
Great. Great. Now, tell us about your little brouhaha with the council in your house.
Well, yeah, originally, you know, when we started modifying the sharing shed, we got a complaint from one of the neighbours, and that instigated the council coming and knocking on our door and to actually satisfy the complaint. I've since got a Freedom of Information copy of that complaint, but they'd crossed the name out, of course. And obviously they needed to follow that up as their policy. And the consents officer at the time was a great guy, very positive. He said, "Oh, Steve, you just need to fill out an application, a retrospective application, sorry, after the fact." So I said, "Yeah, okay, when do you want me to bring that in?" He said, "Oh, the 28th of next month will be fine." So I wandered in there the 28th of next month with all my drawings and photographs of all the work that I'd done and walked in and said, "I've got an appointment with Mr. X." And he said, "Oh, he doesn't work here anymore." So, and that started a cycle of activity of new staff coming on, staff that were actually unqualified, not experienced, and basically in the deep end. The second chap to come along was very aggressive and demanding. So I was aggressive back to him. And from that point on, there's never been any consultation to say, "Come on board, let's sit around the table. How can we help you put this building together according to the code?" Now, being an architect myself and a landscape architect and urban designer, and having worked for seven different councils and local authorities and central authorities, I know a little bit about the industry. I've also worked in 20-odd countries and gone through 50 countries doing research. So I do know a little bit about the industry and the culture. And it's a hell of a difficult job, really. The sad thing about Thames Coromandel District Council, they've had a considerable staff turnover, and they haven't been able to sort of solidify a good position for the people of the district. So it went on and on and on and on. I just rejected their demands because it comes down to contract law, and one of the the angle I took is, I do not consent, because you have to consent until we then enter into a contract. So yeah. I wasn't interested in entering into a contract, but as I said, I don't like the terms and conditions of the contract. And the incompetency also suggests that there's considerable overreach, and that's clearly recognised right throughout the district. There's countless examples all around the district. You know, one small, simple gable house recently cost an extra $120,000, totally unnecessarily. So I wasn't interested in employing those services, because what you're doing to invite the council to administer your building consent is you're actually employing their services. So, you know, some years ago, and as you may remember, some years ago it happened when a few of the borough councils amalgamated into Manukau City Council. A few of the old building consent officers from one of the boroughs said, "Oh, what do we do? We're out of a job. So let's set up our own independent private building consultancy or building consent office." And that was called ABC, Approved Building Certifiers. Now, that just took off like wildfire, but they were very experienced builders and very experienced in the consent process as well and helping people. So it's, and my angle is, let's try and work out a win-win situation rather than lose-lose. Let's not hit people on the head with a brick. Let's sit down with them around the table and have a cup of tea and okay, how can we help you? Well, that's never been the case.
They're not interested in that.
Yeah, I don't know why, because, again, that was my stance when I was, I worked as urban design planner for Hamilton City Council. And I got involved in very similar work, yes. helping the public with their design challenges and their consenting challenges. And that to me is a win-win manner rather than a lose-lose.
But so where is this dispute at this moment today? Are you there, Steve? Steve's dropped off. We'll work to bring Steve back because we're just getting to the crunch point.
Give it to their lawyers.
Oh, here you go, Steve. You've just cut out. I'll just repeat my question because I never got any of your answer, so you'll have to go through it again. I asked, where is this dispute at today?
Okay, can you hear me now?
Good as gold.
Okay, so, yeah, it goes back about 2 years ago when the council had a guts full of my refusal to communicate and connect how they wanted. So they put it to their lawyers, specialist local government lawyers, who then filed an application to the court to demolish. Now, that began in January last year and then found myself in court in early October. The judge awarded in the favour of the council, awarded the demolition rights, and it's been going on since then, and the date has been set for 18th of November, which is Monday coming, for the demolition contractors to move in. So since the additions came out on the 11th of November, I've been very, very busy trying to look at every element in the law to attempt to defend ourselves. And I've been working, beavering away at that, certainly at an increasing level over the last week. And of course, Martina's stress has gone through the roof, thinking that her entire home and the home of our children is going to be destroyed. But I've also brought in an arbitrator. You know, we invited an arbitrator in to see if he could talk to the council to try and find some common ground. And that's been very, very positive. So tomorrow, Friday morning, we have a meeting on site here with members of the council to try and look at some positive middle ground. In the meantime, I'm still pursuing every legal angle that I can find in order to, again, protect ourselves. You know, one of the advertising bylines in RCR is all about freedom.
Yeah. So as today's the 14th of November.
Yeah.
They have scheduled the demolition of your house, did you say, for the 19th?
It's suggested on the 19th, but originally it was set for the 18th, Monday the 18th.
And so your beautiful house that you've built, that houses your family, there's going to be a truck and a excavator turn up, knock it over, and knock it over.
Yeah, that was the original pattern of direction. However, since the arbitrator came in, they have said, no, we won't touch the house, but we want to demolish your cabin and this kid's treehouse as well. So the meeting on Friday, tomorrow morning, is to look at the treehouse and look at the cabin to see what they can interpret needs to be done from their standpoint. It seems that their standpoint at the moment is complete demolition of both of those. But hopefully we'll come to some positive resolve where we're mutually in agreeance of ways forward.
It's just incredible, isn't it? You're not doing anyone any harm. Your house, there's a shortage of housing, there's a shortage of accommodation, all because councils are useless. And here they are, taking a perfectly good home and wanting to demolish it.
Yeah, it's a bit, I call it a bit overreach.
You sound extraordinarily relaxed, Steve.
Well, I've been in the industry for quite some time, And I've worked in local authorities and central authorities, so I understand the entire situation. And I'm a sort of a guy, I guess, you could quite call me aggressive or confrontational, and those that know me recognise that. So, yeah, I don't take a backward stand or not a backward step. I'm one of those characters that actually stand up. And over the last couple of weeks since this has gone viral around networks, people have ragged me from all over the country supporting the fact that I am standing up. And many are saying it's about time, because there's similar problems everywhere. And we ask why. We ask why have things collapsed. And I think, again, if we dig and join the dots, we can see a bigger agenda unfolding. You know, RCR and many of us have talked about the New World Order and what they're up to and what their agendas are and what their tricks are and what their plan is for New Zealand and how they would like it unfolding. So, you know, we're caught in the sandwich.
Yes, because it's all about compliance, right?
Well, enslavement.
Enslavement.
Yeah, enslavement. Servitude and serfdom. You know, you will become our slaves. We are the dictators. We'll tell you how you've got to live. You know, and as I say, RCR's one of your catchcries is all about freedom. And I know Peter Williams is strong on that viewpoint. And I think more of us need to stand up and start voicing it and actually doing something about it, actually exercising it.
Indeed, and here you are on private property. My father got married in 1948, Steve, in North Canterbury, and he bought some land, and he and his brother and his father-in-law cut down the trees on the land, pit-sawed the logs, and built a house. My father wouldn't have asked for anyone's permission.
Well, he wasn't alone. A lot of us
no.
Did that.
Well, that, you know, 1948, it wasn't an issue, and the house still stands. And we have handed over our property to the council, and the councils have such power over us through our land that it's not us that owns it, but we have to go cap in hand anytime we want to do anything on our land. And it's not even that we need to just have a chat to our neighbours about whether they're happy with what we're doing. It's the loss of freedom through the overreach of councils and their planning laws is extraordinary. You're 100% right.
Yeah, and it's getting worse by the minute.
Absolutely.
You know, and I quite enjoy looking back through history to help me join the dots. And there's lots of information available to us in New Zealand if we look back from, Sir Keith Holyoake days through to Rob Muldoon, through to Ruth and Ager and Roger Nomix and Geoffrey Palmer, what he got up to, and then Helen Clark. And all of those mechanisations that unfolded to actually pull the wool over our eyes and begin to manipulate us and control us. So, you know, and it's overreach is a very, very soft term for what's going on.
Very soft term. I was trying to think of a non-swear word. It's hard to appreciate, but everything that government does, every move, every problem, every decision always accumulates power to the government. They never give it up. They never surrender it. And we are left totally powerless, so much so that they can decree that we get locked up in our houses, so much so that you can have your own house on your own land and the council can turn up and demolish it because it doesn't fit. You haven't gone in and bended your knee and doffed your cap to people that actually have no understanding of your land, no understanding of the fields of endeavour that you have, and no ability to build a house.
Yeah, we've been seriously conditioned. Seriously conditioned.
Seriously conditioned.
You know, and the other way of looking at it too, another side element, is a few friends of mine a few years back looked at how much the average working class Kiwi pays in tax. Now, it's recognised that that is 90%. There's several layers of tax on a lot of the goods that we buy. So daily we hear of new potential taxes coming out by the government.
Yeah.
So imagine paying 90% in tax. You say you're working 9 days out of 10 for the gang.
Yeah, you are.
So you've got no freedom whatsoever.
No, and then that little 10% that you got left, right, they're bossing you around on that bit too.
Well, yeah, and you know, inflation is probably 100%. It's not 4%, yeah, as the government says. You look at the prices of the last 3 years, ever since the COVID circus, prices have trebled in most areas.
Do you homeschool the kids?
Yes, we do. Yep.
Good for you. Well, here's a question for you. How can we help?
I can't say this on air because I might get arrested. I don't know. It's, there's many, many subjects that come up on RCR, and it's only a matter of spreading the word and stimulating people's positive enthusiasm to be able to stand up and have a go. There's a good network. There's network after network out there,
yes,
now to assist people. And certainly I would put my hand up and say, yep, anybody out there who wants to check in on similar problems, similar issues, give me a call or send me an email.
How do they find you, Steve?
Well, my email is stephenlawrencehart@gmail.com.
Stephen Lawrence, LAWRENCE.
Yep.
And
V for victory,
Victor.
Stephen. Stephen Lawrence Hart, H-A-R-T.
And it's Stephen with the N in it, not Steve.
Yeah, yep.
Okay, Stephen, yep. Hart. Well, there you go. Have you got a few locals to help you?
Yes. We've been part of the whole COVID circus. We pulled together quite a network here in Coromandel Hauraki districts. We had probably 150, 200 people turning up to meetings regularly around that whole subject. So there is a network here, but...
Well, what do they do if you lie down and if half a dozen people lie down in front of the bulldozer?
You do a tenement square, you reckon?
Yeah.
Well, that's a potential. Yep.
You're not going to go down without a fight, clearly.
Definitely not.
Can you please keep in touch?
Absolutely. Yep.
And can you please tell Martina that she's got a lot of support here.
Excellent. Thanks for that. You know, we just need to spread the story and have more of these chats and more discussion. You know, and the whole ecological agriculture, organics, and what Joel Salatin's up to, I think is another major subject that I'd love to chat to you about. There's a good handful of people around the country would stimulate some great discussion there.
I would love to have it because... we're living in potentially the dawn of a golden age, and here in New Zealand, we haven't woken up to that there could be a major change occurring, and we have these stupid bureaucracies that can't manage to build a cycleway without collapsing the roading network, can't build a house, can't let anyone build a house. When someone does build a house, they knock it down. This is clown world that we're in, and I'm actually, if I keep talking, I'll get angrier and angrier and angrier. Because you're not doing anyone a mischief.
No, the other question is, who is the affected party?
There's none.
No.
The affected party is that you haven't doffed your cap and bent your knee to authority.
Taken my pants off and bent over.
That's right.
But the other great thing about, you know, you mentioned the golden age, you know, you're picking that term up from Trump.
Yeah.
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 And, And, yeah, it's very, very interesting that that term is used, because also, you know, a few close friends of mine are astrologers, hardcore deep astrologers. Yes. And they're saying the same thing from an astrological point of view.
Oh, really? Oh, how interesting.
Yeah.
How interesting.
You know, and there's a great song that came out in the late 60s called The Age of Aquarius.
That's right.
You know, we should play that more and more often. Put it on RCR and play that. And then there's Cat Stevens' song, Changes.
Yes.
It's a good one.
See, you're a child of the 60s, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we were the lucky generation.
We were the lucky generation. And can you please keep in touch?
Absolutely.
Over two things. First, this threatened and potential demolition, and hopefully you can get some sense with your mediator. But two, with talking about agriculture and farming and forestry. I'd love to have that conversation.
Yeah, that's the area that excites me. You know, I grew up on a farm and always been involved in farming. So farming has always been key to my professional arena as well.
And, there you go.
You know, over the last 10 or 15 years, of what I've been doing a lot of is farm design, putting trees and shrubs into pastoral farms. And my claim is that any pastoral farm could have at least 66% tree and shrub cover, and it would enrich the farm considerably.
There you go.
You know, just the mere fact that every plant in the world has got mineral and medicine of some form in it. And cows are extremely intelligent animals. They know what they need to eat. So they will look out for browse from shrubs and trees, besides the clover and rye, which is in a lot of farms, that's all they get. But they will search out what mineral and medicine they need. Just as an example, willows and poplars are rich in zinc and copper. Simple as that.
Steve, keep in touch. Let us know how you get on. You've got our support.
Will do. I will. Thank you very much, and look forward to chatting again.
Thank you so much.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.